Factis Radio, FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
You all right, Georgie?
You
all
right?
Is that you? Is he hungry? You can hear those noises, can't you? And we've also got over there, we've got Emily.
Hello.
And also Katie as well. Good morning.
Hiya.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Representing the council today?
Yes, Team LWC.
Mm-hmm. And you've come in the past we've talked about jobs and so on, and we've ambushed you on the way in, but you are going to talk about something, and I think it's very, I don't know, I think it's the time that we do talk, because there's a lot of news about send kids and so on,
mm-hmm.
about time, but what about the people that have already left school that needs some kind of assistance, mm-hmm. and that we live in a very different world than we did 10, 15 years ago. So we need to be more mindful when it comes down to employment of people that may struggle in life with a variety of different things. So, I mean, I'm glad I got that out of the way without dropping a great big clanger, because it is one of those topics that you've got to be careful what you say and how you say it.
We were literally saying that just now outside the room, saying that, okay, so we need to make sure our terminology is on point and, you know, you get everything correct. But when we're talking that a lot of recruitment and a lot of employment is based on neurotypical behaviour, so there is a real movement towards making sure that recruitment is inclusive. So yeah, we're happy to talk about it and answer any questions and talk about how it impacts at the Isle of Wight Council if you are someone who is not neurotypical and you have some kind of diversity, and how you can work that to your advantage in the recruitment process.
Fantastic. And I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, Emily. I mean, you are going to restore a lot of faith in a lot of people, because there'll be people out there that will be thinking, well, I've got anxiety, I've mm-hmm. got autism, I've got, but you actually had really bad anxiety.
Yeah, I actually was medicated for it as well. Yeah, and yeah, I'm happy to talk about that today. That's not a problem.
But here you are, X amount of years later.
Yeah, and I worked through the entirety of it. I was just saying to Katie outside that actually, my whole anxiety, a couple of years, happened whilst I was in work, and I never took time off for it because I was supported so well as well whilst I was working. So yeah, I'm more than happy to talk about it today and my experiences of it, how it impacts recruitment, that kind of thing. Yeah,
so come on, let's go straight back into
it
then. You know because I've seen anxiety,
mm-hmm.
I hope you don't mind me saying this, I've seen Georgie's anxiety, mm-hmm. and it was off the charts. I've never seen anything like it,
mm-hmm.
and you do get that feeling of maybe thinking, maybe we'll ask Georgie in a minute, well, how can I work, how can I put myself in that environment if, you know, I really struggle with the worst anxiety going. So
yeah.
how did you cope? I know you say we're medicated, but just outline it for us.
Well, my anxiety is really strange. Like, some days, if I am in the right headspace, it doesn't affect me at all. So when I actually interviewed for my job, it was probably the best interview I've ever done for a job ever, because my headspace at the time was so positive. But if I had done it maybe the next day or the day after, that could have been a completely different story. And actually, I've gone for some interviews internally in the council as well since that time, and they were awful. I'll be completely honest, they were some of the worst interviews I'd ever done, because my headspace was so bad. And actually then being rejected for those jobs, you know, went from up here right down, and it made everything way worse, and I got really into a bad headspace with it, and I thought, God, I'm useless and rubbish. And trying to pick myself back up after that was really difficult. But for me, the biggest impact was I had really supportive managers. You know, the people that did reject me also were the people that helped pick me back up afterwards, as well as my, you know, parents and family and friends outside of work. But in work, the people that saw the impact and actually were the ones that were potentially responsible, I'm using that term very loosely, they're not responsible for my feelings, but, you know, they were the ones that let me down and sort of turned me down that path a little bit. The fact that they were the ones to help pick me back up was huge.
So how did you get to that point? Because you've obviously got to get to the interview and get the job.
Yeah.
You know, when you're the other side of that, and you feel like, well, crikey, how do I do that?
I think for me, I'm very driven, and I think I'm very much one of these people where I've seen the anxiety really put me in a bad place. And you get to a point, or at least I got to a point, where I felt like, this is enough, I'm done with it, I really just want to move on with it. And it's really tricky to put yourself into that headspace of, okay, right, I just got to go for it. The worst that's going to happen is a no. And that's you know, for somebody with anxiety, a no can be like the worst thing. But it's my biggest weakness and my biggest strength is that I'm a really big overthinker, and that's a really big thing for my anxiety. So I will overthink every situation, every conversation, every outcome, you know, 10 times over, I'll be thinking about it. So actually, once you do that, although it's a really bad negative, and you know, the night before an interview, I could be sat there thinking, oh my God, you know, what if I have a panic during the interview? What if I have to get up and leave? What if I can't talk? What if I can't, I don't know, if I can't think of what I want to say? I've actually already overthought that situation. So when I'm in the situation, actually, I guess it makes me think that I've already gone through the worst of it in my head already. So although it's a very negative thing in the moment, actually, when it came to the interviews, you know, I've already thought it.
Did you ever feel like, what if I don't get there? What if I can't get there? What if something happens between now and then and I think, I just can't go, I'm not going to go?
I don't really think that way. You know, anxiety is really different for everybody, yeah. And that's not something that ever impacted me. Again, I'm very driven. So if I go for something, I will go for it. I won't back out of it. It's very rare that I do. So that's quite hard advice for me to give, I think.
Okay, I might be able to support on that a little bit, though, because just post-COVID, we ran a scheme at the council called Kickstart. You probably talked about it at the time. It was for 16 to 24-year-olds who had barriers to recruitment and getting into employment because all the hospitality jobs had been furloughed, everything was shut, there were no retail jobs. All the things that would normally have picked up those individuals weren't available and they just couldn't get into work. So the government launched Kickstart. And the vast majority of the young people that I worked with on Kickstart, of all the things that were a barrier, anxiety was the prevalent number one reason why they were struggling to get to the interview, fill out the application form, get the motivation or the confidence to just get through the door in the first place. And we did a lot of work with those individuals. I would meet with them at the job centre. They would come and they would talk to various different employers and they'd come and talk to us. And often they'd just sit there in silence in front of you, just too anxious to know what to do. But because we knew why we were there, everybody in that room was like, okay, so come on, talk to me. This is, you know, friendly and easy. And the way we would approach it would be much more friendly, less formal, less intense, less intimidating. And some of those individuals that have come to us out through that process, they're still with us at the council now, or they've moved on to other really amazing jobs in public sector. Really, you know, academic kids, really switched on, bright, but that social confidence just wasn't there and it was really holding them back. A lot of them went on to actual paid employment with us long term afterwards. One of them won Apprentice of the Year. Mm-hmm. We were talking about Indio the other night, weren't we? He's done incredibly well. We've had just a whole range of really, really good people come through the doors who'd never considered working in the public sector, but they were picked up and looked after by the council and were able to move through their anxiety. But that idea of overthinking that Emily has actually is one of the reasons why she's so amazing on my team, because I know Emily will think everything through to the nth degree. Nothing will, there'll be no stone unturned if
That's
I give her a project.
I say it's like it is a bit of my superpower. As much as my weakness, it is something that actually I've learned to use to my advantage.
Yeah.
And I think I was also going to say actually that, you know, being prepared as well, it's helped me to be really prepared. So you're saying about how do you even get to that situation and become, go to the interview. I do a lot of research and I do a lot of, okay, right, what is the organisation about? What is the role about? What can I do to be the most prepared for this interview? And one of the things we were talking about outside, actually, is that one thing I never thought of, which I probably would do in the future, is asking simple questions like, okay, if I'm successful for interview, how many people are going to be in that room? You know, what's the room going to be like? Is it going to be really bright? Am I, you know, because I'm quite prone to migraines as well, so I wouldn't want a super bright room, and ask whether or not it's reasonable to have a dimmer room, that kind of thing. So I just being really prepared, I think, for me, definitely helps that anxiety level reduce a bit.
Even asking things like, would it be all right if I bring a notepad and pen so I can take notes, or bring some questions during the interview, so you're preparing in advance
and just knowing that it's fine to do that.
Yeah,
again, because I would overthink, am I allowed to bring a notepad, am I not, like, is that going to be weird, is that going to look off,
are they going
to judge
carry
me
it?
For that, yeah. So actually asking those questions and just being, yeah, that's fine, is a massive, oh, okay, that's fine, I can do that.
Do you know what's lovely? It's just talking to you both. It is that if you go back, I don't know, 15, 20 years, even 10 years, you know, that we wouldn't be having this conversation.
No.
But we are now. And that must be lovely for people to know that, you know, if they have, you know, neurodiverse or whatever it's called, mm-hmm. I can't even say it.
So, I struggle with the O in neurodiverse. It just wants to go a different way.
You know, if you anxiety, other issues, and you think, okay, no one really, not cared, but there wasn't that...
there wasn't the deep-seated knowledge or research.
Or people were talking about it. Nobody, like, you know, it was very hidden, isn't it? And they say some, like, depression in men is very hidden and things like that. Like, it's not so much now. I think people are starting to talk about it. But these things existed 10, 15 years ago. We just weren't talking about it.
I think things like the mainstream media. So, for example, Big Bang Theory as a concept, as a show, has done a huge amount of good for showing people who are not neurotypical, who are excelling in their fields, who are doing really well in their, you know, and that's quite standard, but it's never really been publicised. It's not normally been the way, but you're seeing more and more characters now creeping into mainstream shows that are demonstrating neurodiversity, and it's becoming more accepted. And you know, you've got very, very successful business people who are very, very, you know, rich, powerful, successful, all with neurodiversity, and it's becoming clear that those skills that they bring, because their minds maybe think differently, is actually a real plus if you can harness it.
Definitely. And they've all got something to offer. And in some cases, like you say, they're like super bright. And you just need to unlock. But it's a case of how do they get to that point where you can look at them and say, right, I trust you. How do we get to that point?
It takes a whole lot of work, effort, policy, and time and understanding and learning from on behalf of the employer. So one thing I would tread carefully if you are someone who has barriers to employment. Anxiety is a good one to use as an example, because it's not necessarily something you would be diagnosed with. Sometimes it's something that you just feel, something that you just have, something that's just part of you or your personality. Maybe you're going through a difficult time in your life and it's just raised its head and it will go away again later, or maybe it is something more severe that you're having to live with day to day. But with anxiety, if you were to tell every single employer that that was a massive, you know, part of your personality or the way you work, not every employer, sadly, would be sympathetic. I would love to be living in a world where everybody was as open and careful and understanding as they could be, but it's the reality is not that. So there are ways of looking at employers to find employers that are going to be understanding and supportive of what you need, and public sector is fantastic for that. So the council, the NHS, you know, police force, fire service, you know, anything public sector, they tend to have put huge amounts of time and effort into training their managers to understand how this is a benefit. If you're looking at small independent businesses, you might get a small independent business that is fantastic at this, but you're also going to get the ones who just don't know what to do, don't understand, haven't done the research, and you're never really going to know. So I would also be really keen to say to anyone who's maybe been rejected or who has been put off because of the way they've been treated, maybe at an interview or through an application process, it's not everyone, it's not all the employers, and not everyone is caught up, but there are definitely really strong employers out there who really want to do this right, and the Isle of Wight Council is one of them.
I was going to say, I feel like that's the case for sure. Again, you know, I was quite positive on the day of my first interview, so, you know, anxiety wasn't a factor involved in me being hired or not, but you know, I wasn't cast aside because it developed later, kind of thing. Like, it was very supportive.
And we have all kinds of support in place at work, you know, with various different policies and processes in-house, but we have mental health first aiders, for example. We've got a whole list of individual staff at the council who have trained specially because they want to be available to staff members if they need them at any given time. It doesn't need to be somebody in your team. It could be someone who works in a completely different department. You know, someone in finance could be talking to someone in adult social care about mental health and how and getting the support they need there. And it's a really, really lovely programme. And anyone can go in there and train to be a mental health first aider, and anyone can utilise it. We've also got an employee assistance programme in place. So EAP, you'll often see that again if you're someone who suffers with anxiety or who has neurodiversity and want to know how an employer might you know, support you with that in the workplace. We have, for example, EAP, which is Employee Assistance Program, and that's an external company who can support all our staff with all kinds of things. You know, there's mental health support and guidance, counselling, therapy. They also provide, even, you know, if you're in financial crisis and that's impacting, they'll support you with that. And that's outside of the council, so it's not your line manager who's helping you with it. You can actually step away and get that support provided by the public sector. It's great. It's really, really special.
It's really positive to hear. I've got, I want to bring Georgie in because you must have a question, Georgie. I'm hoping you have.
Well, I don't know. I suppose I just wonder what support there is for someone like me who realistically can't cope with the normal amount of hours for work and isn't like impressive enough, like education wise, where my anxiety and issues could maybe be a bit more overlooked, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah.
And I don't have the experience because I spent a lot of time struggling with my mental health. So those are kind of things that I worry about when it comes to going into work.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's really hard, really, really hard when the inner voice and the inner critic takes over and tells you that people won't be able to see past certain things. And sadly, for example, if you have anxiety, you often don't have the confidence to bat those things away. So, for example, my job at the Isle of Wight Council, when I applied for it, I knew they wanted someone who had their maths GCSE. I do not have my maths GCSE. I got a D. I tried it 5 times. I was not getting that C no matter what I did. But I knew I could do the job. I knew I had the skills and experience they needed. So I phoned the manager who was hiring and I just said to them on the phone, look, I fit everything you're looking for and more, but I don't have the maths GCSE. How much maths is involved in this job? And the line manager was amazing. She was great on the phone. And she was like, well, actually, there's nothing here mathematically that you couldn't get support with or that there wouldn't be a system in place for you or that someone else on the team couldn't do. So if you can do all of this stuff that we don't have in-house skills-wise, actually, we'd really like to talk to you. So she really encouraged me to come for the interview. No, but I knew that that barrier wasn't going to come up at interview because I tackled it on the phone before I even got to that stage, before I'd even filled in my application. So if you know there's something, if there's a job that you like the look of, that you're thinking, do you know what, I know I could do that, I know I could. Sometimes speaking to the person hiring before you even fill out the form is a good way of removing the barriers. And also when they receive your application form, they're going to remember you and go, oh, that's that person who was proactive enough to come and talk to me. And we engaged on the phone and they were really interesting. Now, I know picking up the phone can also be the challenge, but I feel like maybe picking up the phone and speaking to someone beforehand to open the door is maybe easier than trying to handle that at interview.
Actually,
so it takes the pressure off.
As somebody that hates phone calls, hates them, I will avoid them at any given chance. I find emailing first, just, you know, just sending that email saying hi, giving your question, just being done with it, getting it gone, and then you can kind of forget about it. The message is gone. That, for me, breaks down that first barrier. Mm. Once I've then got quite a friendly, like, email response or whatever, then I find it easier to pick up the phone. So, actually, for me, it's email, then phone. But I know that you're very much, pick up the phone and it works and whatever. But, yeah, no, that, for me, is, like, the first barrier. I can do it. I will do it if I have to. But if I don't have to and I can email instead, that, for me, is just that first barrier. It just lightens that first.
This might sound wrong on every level, and I apologise for this, but is it an age thing?
It probably
because
is.
We're used to be talking on the phone.
100%.
I think
because
so.
Now it's easier to say, right, there's an email.
Yeah, right, and you don't as an overthinker, I overthink my phone call conversations, unless it's, you know, to my dad or my mum or whatever, that's fine. But if it's to somebody I don't know, or it's to somebody that I don't deal with a lot, or somebody that's, you know, perhaps got quite a bit more authority than me, I really overthink those conversations and saying the wrong thing. So you're sending an email that I can check and check and check for a couple of times is just that first barrier. And then once, you know, you tend to get a response back and it's really friendly and like, oh, thanks for your email. And you're like, oh, okay, this is fine. This person's fine. I can talk to them.
We have a generational difference for sure in the workplaces everywhere, where the younger workers are so different in how they communicate naturally in their day-to-day life with their friends, mm-hmm. with their, even with their schools, with their teachers, with their tutors. Everything's online, everything's digital, everything's email, messages, WhatsApp, mm-hmm. you know, even things like Teams, which we use at the council, which is video conferencing. That being the standard route for communication. If you're old school like me, grew up with a landline in the living room where everyone could hear your phone calls, and then I worked in a call centre where we were all sat on holding the phones, no mm-hmm. headsets, nothing. You know, if you've grown up and that's been the standard way you communicate, it's easy for me to pick up the phone because that's what I know. I've had to really adapt that actually it's fine if people don't want to pick up the phone. And also the person at the other end might not like mm-hmm. Talking on the phone as much as they like receiving an email. So it can work both ways. So how you make that initial approach to a potential employer actually doesn't really matter whether it's digital or whether it's via the phone or even in person, if you're popping into a cafe or something to give them your CV or whatever it might be. It's just making that initial step mm-hmm. and saying, I'm really interested in the vacancy that you're advertising. Could I ask you a couple of questions? How you do that actually doesn't matter. The fact that you're doing it shows such a huge amount of positive, proactive behaviour. Employers lap that up. And you mentioned being somebody who maybe couldn't commit to the normal working hours, which yeah. I think is a really, really, really valid point, which no one really talks about. And it's nice for us to have the opportunity to talk about that too. Mm-hmm. So the Isle of Wight Council, as an employer, embraces flexible working, but also agile, hybrid, and, you know, various different ways of working around the jobs that need doing. So everyone can ask for flexible working, no matter who the employer. That's pretty much standard. But not every employer has the facility and capacity to be able to offer it. The council's great. Again, when I went for my job, it was a full-time post that they wanted. They wanted a 37-hour week. Now, I, at the time, had young children and was like, well, I work from home at the moment. I run my own business. I don't really want to give up being able to do the school run. 37 hours is going to be a bit tight to be able to do everything I need to do. I'll ask. So I said, would you consider someone on a 30-hour week to do, I can do the tasks, everything that you've got there, I can do in that time. Would that be okay? And we had that discussion, and I've been on a 30-hour contract ever since. So I've done every single school run while I've been working at the council, which has been fantastic. My kids have not noticed, you know, not skipped a beat. And that was really important to me. And actually, the council ended up saving money because they didn't have to pay me for that extra 7 hours, and they're getting just as much work. So that was really good.
And we have quite a lot of jobs, don't we, that we advertise that are actually part-time to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of jobs actually aren't full-time at the council. And even if they are full-time, sometimes it could be worked out as a job share, so two people making up the full-time hours.
Absolutely.
So actually, there's a lot of opportunities if you can't commit to the full working week.
And there's a secret third option too.
Oh,
always. Which is casual working. Yes. So we have a system. Now, there's not a huge demand at the moment for casual working. It comes and goes. Sometimes the demand is higher. But you will see jobs on our jobs pages that say casual support worker or casual this or casual that. And what that means is those hours that they're offering are sort of ad hoc, unpredictable. Maybe one week you'll need to do 10 hours. Maybe the next week you'll do 5. Maybe one week there won't be any hours. Or maybe you'll be working on something for a short period of time. Maybe like they'll need someone for 2 weeks just to cover sickness leave or something like that. And those casual posts work both ways. So the employer can say, I would like you to work these hours, is that okay? But you can say no, and it doesn't impact whether or not, or what they think of you, or your contract. You can just choose not to work. Oh, I'm not available on Tuesdays, or I can't do a full, you know, 9 to 5. I could only do 9 to 12. Mm-hmm. And you can just have that as this is the casual hours I'm available for, and you get to choose. Now, it doesn't mean, sometimes it won't match the job that you're applying for, but sometimes it will. And sometimes they just want people available when they need them. So casual working might be a good option for you if you don't have specific bills to pay, mortgage, that kind of thing, where you need a consistent income. And then what you're already doing here at Vectis Radio with the volunteering is genius. Honestly, when you talk about not having experience and having sort of missed out on that part, if you can do volunteering, and particularly in areas that you're interested in work-wise, it will open doors for you left, right and centre, because employers love the social responsibility and the motivation and the energy and effort it takes to volunteer. Like,
I think
you're going to show up.
One of the biggest things that I learned was actually, I was very academic and loved school and loved doing all of the courses that I could possibly do in my life. But actually, it's the experience that's the really big thing. Like doing this volunteering and the 4 P's thing is really, really good. And it's really good to put on your CV, and it's really good lived experience of doing things and being proactive and putting yourself in a situation that you might find quite tricky to begin with, and overcoming that is way more important, I think, than quite a lot of academic
Hey, look, things. Thank you for coming in, and I would imagine that if there are people out there that are listening that are, you know, going through this this wrestle with themselves to think, oh, I can't do that, because we've just spent 20 minutes saying you can.
And how, so
when we've worked out that, right, we're going to do, can we have where do we look on your website for roles and jobs and so on?
So if you go to www.iow.gov.uk and then /jobs, you can also get there from the main council homepage, so Isle of Wight Council website, but the /jobs to take you to all the live vacancies for us. It's a digital online application, so have a look through the website, see the job that suits you most, and then you'll click the apply now button. It'll take you into our application portal, and we have new jobs added there like all the time. Every day there's new jobs going up, so check back regularly. If there's not something today that you like the look of, there may well be by Friday, so it's worth double checking, you know, a couple of times a week just to see what's new on there. And from me, my top tip for anyone who is anxious or concerned or unsure about applying for a vacancy, the thing that I always do, I've worked in recruitment for like 20 odd years, and I've had to apply for jobs myself as well, and I know what the market looks like, and I know how difficult it can be for everyone, but I have seen so many vacancies that only had one applicant. Mm-hmm. No competition, that one person who went, you know what, I'm going to give it a go, and they got the job because they were the one applicant that went for it. You could be that one applicant. Don't assume that there are hundreds of applicants for every single job. I promise you there are not. There are some. We had an assistant psychologist post that blew up and had, you know, I think nearly 100 applicants in the end. But as a general rule, it's a really varied mix. So if you convince yourself in your mind when you're filling out that application form that you could be one of two applicants for that job, then suddenly that seems a lot more reasonable and a lot more doable. So don't assume that there's hundreds of other people also competing for the same space. There may not be.
Fantastic. Thank you for coming in and giving that advice. And thank you for coming in and sharing your story as well, because it's going to inspire people.
Thank you.
Georgie as well.
And her getting turned down for that job meant she ended up on my team, so
yeah,
I'm delighted.
It worked out really well for me in the end. But,
yeah, you say that for now. Thank you, ladies. We are going to take a break.